Well, hello again and welcome to another edition of Authors Audio. I'm your host, Jake D. Steele. Remember, you can listen to all of our interviews by visiting our website at www.authorsaudio.com and click on the homepage listen icon or go to our extensive archive section. I have with me today an author who is no newcomer to controversy. I'm talking about none other than Jerome R. Corsi, who is a staff reporter for WorldNet Daily. He received his PhD from Harvard University in political science in 1972 and has thereafter written many books and articles, including his latest bestseller, The Late Great USA, all about the coming North American Union. Other books include Showdown with Nuclear Iran, Black Gold Stranglehold, The Myth of Scarcity and the Politics of Oil, which he co-authored with WorldNet Daily columnist Craig R. Smith, and his book Atomic Iran. Now, when Barack Obama stepped onto the national political stage in 2004 as the then state senator of Illinois, he became much better known as a man to be listened to with his memorable address to the 2004 Democratic National Convention. Soon after that, author Jerome Corsi began researching Obama's personal and political background. Dr. Corsi claims in his new book, Obamanation, that Obama has had extensive connections with Islam and radical politics from his father's and stepfather's Islamic backgrounds to his communist and socialist mentors in Hawaii and Chicago. Also, his 20-year-long religious affiliation with the Black Liberation theology of former Trinity United Church of Christ Reverend Jeremiah Wright. So let's get down to business discussing with Dr. Corsi some of these ideas that he lays down in his book. Jerome, it's great to have you on the program. How are you doing?
Well, you're right, Jake. I mean, the abomination has just taken off. I mean, it's number one New York Times bestseller now 2 weeks in a row. Looks like it'll be number three weeks in a row, number one New York Times bestseller. That's really pretty incredible. And the impact it's making, I think, is also very large. I've certainly taken a lot of abuse for the book. And I think if you can measure the impact by the abuse, then this book is hitting Obama hard, and the Obama campaign is increasingly afraid of it.
Well, there's no question, Jerry, that the book has created a lot of media controversy and certainly with the voters also. I'd like to play the devil's advocate a little bit, though, here with you and ask you directly, what is it that you're afraid of if Barack Obama was to become president of the United States?
Well, the major objection is really in the subtitle. It's the foreign leftist politics and then the cult of personality. I mean, these are the two issues I'm trying to communicate. The Barack Obama's background, even going back to, you know, his high school days when his first mentor was, you know, the communist poet and journalist Frank Marshall Davis, you know, from the 30s. And he'd retired in Hawaii, and that's, you know, where Obama begins. Through Saul Alinsky, the radical Chicago community organizer, Obama worked in the Alinsky organization. And, you know, this whole leftist bent has been in Obama's entire background. You can see it in his current politics. I mean, he's still for redistribution of wealth, even with this, you know, Global Poverty Act that he wants to put into place to increase foreign aid through the U.N.
What's the matter with a little bit of redistribution of wealth? Isn't that isn't that what people really need in the United States?
Well, it's basic, you know, socialism 101. I mean, it's the whole idea is take from the haves property, income, and give it to the have-nots. And it's been a failed system. It has not worked worldwide. It's been tried since, you know, the Russian Revolution, 1917. It's been tried, but we've never been able to have a socialist system that has been productive or really been, you know, able to economically sustain itself long term.
Well, I don't know. I tend to disagree with that because I think that people that don't have anything are in a very inopportune position to get that leg up that they need. I mean, you know, the idea that all men are created equal is just a joke. It's not, they're not created equal. They're born into different families. You know, some are rich, some are poor. The rich have by far a greater chance of becoming better educated, better incomes, and living in better neighborhoods, and probably having less trouble with the law. And I see the U.S. today, excuse me, Jerry, and I think back in the younger days when I was a kid, I was about 16, 17, the United States seemed to be a much more relaxed society, a society where there was more wealth distributed, which actually created the middle class, which gave people some kind of a hope of a little piece of land, a picket fence, and all that kind of jazz.
Well, the problem is, right now, since the Great Society in the 1960s, we've been redistributing trillions of dollars of wealth to try to solve problems of poverty through money. That just doesn't work. But we haven't made any inroads. Poverty numbers are just as bad, just as recalcitrant as they were four decades ago. Well, but this is the irony of it. I mean, the only way people advance is through families, through education, through jobs, and redistribution of income, which lowers incentives for people to achieve. I mean, take Obama's whole idea that he's going to increase capital gains taxes. What we've seen in presidencies, you know, numerous presidencies, where if you raise the capital gains tax, you actually depress investment, create fewer jobs, and get less tax revenue collected. We should be wanting, especially now as the economy is struggling to recover, we should be wanting to lower capital gains taxes. And the massive tax increases that are going to be needed under Obama presidency to pay for all of his many different increases in social welfare programs of one kind or another, including universal health care, are going to put a burden. You know, we already can't meet our burden in terms of, you know, gap accounting. If you do a gap accounting of the U.S. federal budget, which is done once a year by the Department of Treasury, we're running something like a $4.5 trillion deficit. When you take into account the net present value of the future Social Security and Medicare obligations we're creating today, there's no way we can pay for what we've got already.
Jerry, let's look at it right head on. You know, what about George Bush? Now, George Bush basically has been called the worst president the United States has ever had. He's been at war for most of his whole presidency. He attacked Afghanistan when most...
But I didn't write the book to support Bush, and Bush isn't running this year. My whole focus is just Obama. I didn't write it to support McCain.
No, but bear with me, because I'm making a point. Okay. Now, he has left the country in such a mess, politically, economically, no money for proper schools, borders that are not enforced is one of your main issues, no programs for the poor, no money left for upgrading your infrastructure, all sorts of nonsense stories about Iraq when you were attacked, apparently, by men from Saudi Arabia. You would think that he would have attacked Saudi Arabia instead of Afghanistan. No. Then he put up a very, very weak argument for attacking Iraq, which, of course, we now know was basically just for oil and for getting a base in the Middle East. Is that not, I mean, am I way off here?
I didn't agree with very much of what you said, but my point now is not Bush. My focus isn't Bush. My focus is Obama right now. And Bush is leaving. He's going to be gone here pretty soon. And I think that what we've got, you know, my whole focus has been trying to communicate to people. 4 years ago, Obama was a, you know, obscure state legislator in Illinois. And 3 years in the U.S. Senate, I can't find a single accomplishment. There's no bills with his name on it of any significance. There's, no hearings that he's conducted of any significance. So Obama is really pretty much unknown, and that's why I think there's been a big void. And a book critical of Obama, which mine is, I think is finding a large market because people are hungry to find out who this guy is.
Yeah, but okay, look at McCain, for example. He's the Republican ticket. I know that you're neither a Republican or a Democrat. I know you're is it a constitutional party?
I'm a member of the Constitutional Party, and yeah. I will vote for Chuck Baldwin in the election. But,
okay.
I've never been a Democrat or Republican, to my knowledge, unless I was forced to sign up by some primary in some state I voted in. But I've never been a member of either party in any active or functioning way.
Yeah, but I look at McCain. I'm just trying to look at down the middle, Jerry, and saying, what has McCain put forward that is so great for a time in America that I think that you would agree this particular time in America really needs some enlightenment, some major new ideas have to come about.
If McCain wins, I'll probably be opposing him for another 4 years like I have the last four. But I've concluded that of all the candidates, Obama is the most dangerous. And it's, again, you know, when I go back into his background and really get into Tony Rezko and all the corruption that Obama was involved with in Chicago, get into black liberation theology and see this radical religion he associated with and how it really has ties into the black rage that Obama himself writes about extensively in his own autobiography, Dreams for My Father. So again, I think that we've got a very leftist candidate here who's way beyond the pale of normal U.S. middle-of-the-road politics. And that's why I wrote the book, to really bring attention to that.
Isn't a lot of the things you're saying, I have read most of the book, and a lot of things you seem to be saying is he's sort of guilty by association with certain people like Farrakhan or
It's a lot more than association. I mean, give me a break. With Farrakhan, he went on the Million Man March, 1995. Reverend Wright and Farrakhan are very close at the hip. That church has given a Farrakhan award. And if you take a hard look at black Muslims and black liberation theology, they both agree that the United States is the culprit. I mean, they both agree in a lot. About the only difference between the black Muslims and black liberation theology is black Muslims pray to Allah, and black liberation theology prays to Jesus Christ. Otherwise, black liberation theology says that the historical Jesus Christ was black, that he created Christianity as a revolutionary religion to destroy the imperialist Romans of the day. The ancient Romans were colonizing Israel. And, you know, the carry forward is that we are the imperialists of today, USA, and, you know, we are the ones who enslaved blacks, and we created ghettos to colonize blacks. So this GD USA is at the heart of black liberation theology, just like it's at the heart of black Muslim thinking. That's why Farrakhan and Lewis Wright are so close together, because ideologically they're very close in agreement.
But Jerry, you're not saying that Obama is a Muslim now. He said he was a Christian. But, I mean, even if he was a Muslim now, wasn't the United States founded on freedom of religion, that you could practice your own religion without worries from the state? I don't understand your point there.
Oh, I didn't. I said it clearly in the book that I can't read Obama's mind. So I don't. If he says he's a Christian, then he is. Now, the only evidence, demonstrable evidence, that Obama has been a Christian is in his 30s when he was baptized at Trinity United Church of Christ. I show in the book that when he was 6 to 10 years old, he was, in Indonesia with his stepfather. He received Islamic instruction for at least a year in the public school, which his campaign has denied. And he was registered in the schools as both a Muslim and an Indonesian citizen. And the testimony of his friends at the time, reported through the Indonesian newspapers and television today, is that Obama was living as a Muslim, and he was going to mosque with his father.
Okay, you talk about those 52 seconds there of what Obama would like to do. He'd like to stop the war, bring the troops home. He doesn't want to weaponize space. He wants to cut wasteful defense spending something along the lines, I believe, that Eisenhower was saying in his last speech.
You know, that's a debatable point there, Jay, because I'm arguing that what Obama talked about in that 52-second video, which is reviewing what he calls unnecessary and wasteful military weapons programs, I think are the weapons programs that have given our military the edge. And if we don't have those programs, we're going to have a weakened military as a result of an Obama presidency. Obama wants that money to redistribute more of it to social welfare programs, and he says so.
Jerry, but, you know, I mean, it's kind of strange, you know. If you're always on the attack, if you're always confronting people like the Bush government is, as far as I'm concerned, then of course you're going to get all the people, many countries in the world that are going to get their hackles up. But if you approach these countries with a more diplomatic kind of approach, then maybe, in fact, you will get a reduction in nuclear weapons.
Well, you know, and I'm not sure that's not naive, Jake. I mean, look, you deal with Ahmadinejad in Iran. Well, you've now had every administration since 1979. You had Madeleine Albright and the Clinton administration apologizing to Iran. It didn't do any good. You know, you had Madeleine Albright easing restrictions on pistachios and, you know, Iranian rugs. It did no good. The Iranians are a radical regime. They, you know, believe in this Shiite messiah. There's a, you know, the Mahdi is going to come back out of the well. A little boy went down the well in 700, whatever it was, A.D., or 900, whatever it was. And, you know, then when Mahdi comes out of the well, there's going to be a triumph of Shiite Islam worldwide. It's a radical philosophy. And I don't think being nice to them is going to make any difference.
Jerry, even in your own words, though, when you're talking about atomic Iran, your idea, which I thought was very productive, was to not bomb Iran, but to get the younger people to be educated enough to vote in a leader who would be much more...
I want peaceful change. I don't think we have to go to war with all the bad guys, but I think we have to recognize that we're not going to, you know, by being nice to them or talking nice to them, going to make any difference. What I'm talking about in Iran is regime change from within by supporting the expatriates around the world and the, you know, the freedom fighters within Iran who want to change their own country. Now, that's actually a pretty aggressive foreign policy, but it's not war. I think you still need a strong military because, you know, you have to be able to deal with it should it get to war.
About not having a strong military. I think it spends more on military than almost four times than any other country in the world. And I think it's, I think one of the problems that a lot of, you know, I'm not making excuses for radicals or bombers or, you know, any of these people. That's definitely just absolutely, you know, not right. However, having the U.S. military all over the world, which it is, in everybody's backyard. You know, I guess what I'm trying to say, Jerry, is that, you know, how would the United States like Russia to park itself in Cuba or off the shore of Catalina Island or something? You know, it's just, there's just too much military going on to make other people feel comfortable enough to drop their arms and come to the table. That's what I see. And I think this is what Obama is going for. And George Bush's attitude of, you know, I've never seen a war he didn't like, has been a total, if you want to use the word abomination, that's where I would use it. It's just been a total failure on the part of Bush, the Bush government.
Well, I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying basically that Obama's out there with a whole approach to weaken military. Even his ideas about having a no-nukes world, he has no practical ideas as to how that's going to be accomplished. No, it'd be a wonderful idea, but every president since Truman has been trying to do it. Reagan got closest to it with the meetings with Gorbachev in Iceland, and, you know, and except that Gorbachev demanded that we lay down this whole space defense initiatives, you know, what the other side tends to call Star Wars. And, you know, Reagan wouldn't do it. Now, I've been reading, you know, since the 50s, Herman Kahn, the other theorists, in terms of, you know, how we could move towards nuclear disarmament, as is very, very difficult. It has not been solved since 1945, and Obama, in this 52-second video, is claiming he's going to move to a no-nukes world. Well, I think that's naive.
Like, you don't think that would be a good idea?
And he hasn't given me a plan that says, here's the new idea that's going to make it break through that Herman Kahn never thought about, or Henry Kissinger, or, even Brzezinski, who, Obama models himself after. Brzezinski has no concrete plans. Now we're going to get nuclear disarmament. Brzezinski couldn't even get Jimmy Carter out of the 444-day hostage crisis in Tehran. So it's naive. What I'm saying is Obama's foreign policy is kind of attitudinally left, very far left, anti-military, and he doesn't have the experience or the sophistication to really understand the difficulty of some of the issues he's seeming to say he's going to conquer and solve a no-nukes world without any problem. I just don't believe it.
Well, Jerry, what do you think about this new ticket with Obama and Biden? Do you not feel that he brings a very long period of understanding and experience to Obama's relatively small experience in government? I think that's a good ticket.
I think Biden was the worst choice he could have made. I was shocked. Yeah, Biden, where's the change in hope? Biden's been in the Senate for 40 years. Biden is one of the oldest guys around. He's establishment. He's one of the most liberal. We're talking about liberals. If Obama's the most liberal, I think Biden's the third most liberal. This is a very far left ticket. And Biden has a tendency for gaffe after gaffe after gaffe. I think Obama's going to lose 2 or 3 days, every month, September and October, both months in the election cycle, just explaining Biden. I would never have chosen Biden. No, I think it was a bad choice. And I think the idea that Obama's trying to compensate with somebody by foreign policy experience is an open admission that he doesn't have it. It just draws more attention to his own weakness. People don't vote for the vice president.
You don't think that's a good idea? Okay, well, this whole idea of black power emancipation by black people, whatever that means, selective, this idea that I think Malcolm X had, selective buying, boycotting, marching, and even rebellion, this whole anger about the black, a lot of the black people, because they didn't feel they were being treated right. Are you saying that he's in the same camp as these other people?
Well, Obama tells us that he is. He says some of his early mentors were reading Malcolm X, and this black liberation theology, when you study it, is a revolutionary religion. There's only about 4 African-American churches that are black liberation theology of the 4,000 African-American churches in the United States. The African-American community regards them as radical. Jake, I'm going to have to get going here. Another interview coming right up. But I appreciate it, and thank you for interviewing me on The Abomination.
Well, Jerry Corsi, I want to thank you so much for taking the time out to be on Authors Audio, discuss this very controversial book, The Abomination, with me and for our listeners. And I know that each person is going to have to make up their mind eventually what they think about Barack Obama and his mission to become President of the United States of America. And you have given us another idea, so a few ideas of what he may be about.
I hope to catch up with you again soon. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.
So, Jerry, thanks so much. And until next time, this is Jake D. Steele saying, keep dreaming and happy reading. Bye for now.